The first major clusters of COVID-19 in Arkansas were in correctional facilities. For decades, the state has struggled with how to treat inmates. The 1980 movie Brubaker with Robert Redford placed a national spotlight on past problems. For our latest dive into archives from the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History, Randy Dixon tells Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums about the real story that inspired the film.
How many men are buried out there? You wouldn't even know, would you? It's crazy. They're digging up bodies. That murder they're talking about in there. And if they condone it, how are you going to turn around and tell these guys why they're locked up?
Robert Redford, Brubaker.
This is Ozarks at Large, and it is time to go through some Arkansas archives with Randy Dixon, who is with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. And Randy, it felt like we're going to the movies just then. What did we just hear?
Well, we did go to the movies. That was from the 1980 Robert Redford film Brubaker. And it's based on a true story from Arkansas.
And not necessarily a true story that Arkansas was proud of.
No, absolutely not. It was a very dark time, as we have from time to time in Arkansas history. But this was the prison system, the Arkansas prison system, specifically Cummins and Tucker. And that movie was based on a true story, a man by the name of Tom Merton, who was brought in the late 60s to reform our prison system. So I dug into the KETV news archives to sort of take a look at Tom Merton and what happened with his short stay here in Arkansas.
This is a story that kind of covers two gubernatorial administrations, the first of which, the man who was governor for about a dozen years, Orville Favis.
While he was in office, there was a very corrupt prison system. They had what was called a trustee system, which was on its face flawed, I think. There were no regular guards except for a handful in the entire prison. The rest were trustees. They were trusted inmates, but they were armed and they had permission to control the other inmates. And so that presented a problem in itself, but it was one part of the extreme violence that took place in the corruption. But there was a state police investigation underway under Favis. And in 1966, he was at the governor's mansion and had just taken a tour of the prison. And this was sort of in the midst of this investigation that was going on that would be released later.
First, let me say that on the inspection tour of the prison today, I found everything well under control and relaxed at the Tucker farm. All the prisoners have gone back to work and everything seems to be fine. While I was there, they presented me a petition signed by a majority of the prisoners, thanking me for correcting some of the wrongs and expressing their appreciation that the improvement is being made. I got over to Cummings and I found that a sit-in was in progress. Out of 1,500 prisoners, 144 were in the barracks. A few of them refused to go out this morning, and others who went out in the fields and sat down were brought back. The total was 144. And in this respect, let me say this. Captain Bishop had plans to build some isolation wards, but the strap is not abolished.
He brought up the strap.
Yeah.
Which ended up being central in part of this corruption and violence. And it was a form of punishment, later considered a means of torture for the inmates. But you hear me talk about Jim Pitcock mm-hmm. all the time. news director, reporter, KTV, my boss, started this archive system, but I speak of him as if he's, I guess, some sort of mythical news god or something. But he lives in Little Rock. He's retired, and he was actually there during all of this period in the late 60s that all of this started to come to light. And I talked to him about Tom Merton and this strap that Paulus was referring to.
It was kind of like a leather strap that a barber used to have that he would, you know, sharpen his razor, except it was about 4 inches wide and about 6 feet long. And what they would do is, if one of the inmates was out of line or for any number of reasons, they would tie him to a pole in front of the superintendent's office so everyone could see. And the superintendent then would, you know, give him 8 lashes or 10 or 20, depending on the infraction or the alleged infraction. If he had done something out in the field during the day. So that was really the opening chapter of when we really knew that something was going on down there.
We've heard from Orville Faubus. What about Winthrop Rockefeller, who succeeded Faubus into the mansion?
Yes, he defeated Faubus, came into office in January of 67. And Faubus never released this report. Winthrop Rockefeller did. And it was a very detailed account of, you know, lack of food for inmates, 14-hour work days, violence. And so Rockefeller, early on, vowed to change and reform the prison system. And that's where he hires Tom Merton.
As you know, I obviously have confidence in Mr. Merton, or I wouldn't have brought him into the picture in the first instance. Mr. Merton has applied for the job, and I think Mr. Merton has demonstrated his professional ability, not only as a penologist, but also as a superintendent of Tucker Farm. Therefore, I think he is the logical person to succeed Mr. Bishop, and I propose to make that recommendation to the penitentiary board.
So Rockefeller hires Merton, and he comes in and immediately starts making changes. He's pointing out problems. He's having news conferences. He points out this problem with the strap and how it should not be used. But then another thing that comes up that was shocking, no pun intended, but it was the Tucker telephone, which was an extreme form of discipline, torture, really, that they would take a crank-type device like a telephone, like you would wind up a telephone, that it would generate an electrical charge. And the harder you would crank it, the more of an electrical charge it would make, and they would connect these connectors to various parts of the inmates' bodies, usually their genitals. It was a terrible form of treatment, and he would have news conferences point out these problems, and he did not tread lightly. He didn't always get along with his bosses. He made enemies, and it looked as though he was kind of losing support, and he had a news conference after a meeting he had personally with Governor Rockefeller about some of the things that he was doing.
I didn't really believe we were going down opposite paths. It became apparent in the press that it might be going that way, but I didn't really believe we had a difference of mind. And we've been trying to have this meeting for some time, and I think today we finally come out of it with the conclusion that we still have the same goals and objectives, and that perhaps a little more frequent contact would help eliminate some of the misunderstandings.
One of the most grisly aspects of this also was graves, unmarked graves on prison grounds. What can you tell me about that?
Well, he started digging. He had an informant in the prison who said that there were hundreds, probably 200 bodies of inmates who had been killed or died of unnatural causes that had been buried in fields. And so which brought a lot of attention, including national attention, but he took the media out and started digging up some bodies. He immediately found three bodies, and Jim Pitcock can pick up and talk about Merton and what led to this grave digging.
He came in, and it seemed like everyone was impressed with him. And at first, and then some of his actions resulted in him becoming enemies with some of the folks who had been friends with him and had supported his moves. And I guess the absolute turning point for Merton was the grave digging episode. He contended that those were the graves of inmates who had been shot or whatever. But it happened that it was actually a pauper's graveyard, where if an inmate had died at the prison of natural causes and no one had claimed his body, then they would bury him over in an area on the prison grounds. And so that's where they had dug. And Merton got a lot of publicity about it, but it really, after the initial headlines, it really turned out to be pretty much of a nothing story.
And you know, he said that it sort of died down as a news story after another independent state police report came out and thought it was part of a pauper's grave that still is questioned. At least it was by Merton a couple of years later. And you know, he was accused of grandstanding and wanting the attention, but a couple of years later, he was back in Arkansas speaking to a group at the University of Arkansas, and he defended his actions.
We had an agreement with the Arkansas State Police through Captain Brown and former Major McKee that we were going to dig until we found some evidence, one way or the other. And he agreed that it was ridiculous to have a state trooper stand there every time we dug a trench silo on the farm. So the understanding was, which was well known to all parties involved, was that we would continue digging exploratory holes, and when we came up with something, then we would call in the state police, and they at that time would take over the official investigation. This is exactly what was done. It was agreed by Governor Rockefeller, his aides, and myself, and that's exactly the system we follow.
After hearing all this, it is hard to remember, and maybe even a little surprising to remember, he wasn't even here in Arkansas a year, was he?
Yeah, he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, but he did bring a lot of attention politically, through the media, and you know, nationally through the media, to the problems that were going on, that he described the Arkansas prison system as the worst in the country. Let's drop back in with Jim Pitcock, and this is his perspective of what happened during that time as a news person?
From the mid-60s until the early 70s, it seemed like something was going on down at either Cummins or Tucker all of the time. I bet over the years we probably made 100 trips down there.
And so the story is not over.
No. Now, that's where the movie ends.
Right.
You know, Brubaker pulls out. He's been fired. And that's kind of what happened, but not with our prison system. So I think we may need one more episode. Is that okay?
That's fine. We'll continue this next week.
Yeah, next week we can look at what happened. After Merton left, a man by the name of Bob Sarver came in, and he picked it up from there. And so we can look at, a little more on the prison system scandals and what was done to improve the lot of the inmates.
You can find out so much more about Arkansas history and hear from some of the people that made history if you put Pryor Center into a search engine. Randy Dixon is with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History, joins us most Mondays. Randy, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thank you. I really enjoyed and look forward to next week.
Randy Dixon is with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History, and he talks with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums almost every week about episodes and personalities in Arkansas's history.